Shir on Likutei Sichos Chelek Yutes, the Sicha of Shoftim, the second Sicha. The Rebbe begins in reference to the Pasuk in our Parsha of Shoftim that a people, about these are the laws incumbent upon a king, that the king should not return the people to Egypt. In other words, he shouldn't have too many horses. So this way he shouldn't bring the people back to Egypt. Egypt was a place known for its horses. So if he has more than the horses that he requires for his chariot, then this may lead to doing, commerce with Egypt, going down to Egypt and living in Egypt. And Hashem said to you, continues the Pasuk, you shall not continue, like Tosifon, you should not continue to come back, Loshuv, to return in this way forevermore. In other words, don't ever go down to Egypt. And this halacha that's derived from this is that a Yid is not allowed to go to settle in Egypt. And more than that, Chazal tell us, in the Yerushalmi, in the Mechilta, Chazal tell us, our sages tell us that in three places the Torah were warned not to go back to the land of Mitzrayim. In other words, there are three times that the prohibition is mentioned. The Rambam, in his book of Halacha, Siyada Chazaka, he brings this Halacha, and he says he's not allowed to live in Egypt, and he also brings this saying of Chazal that three times in three places the Torah warned against going back to Egypt. However, from the language where he doesn't specify, we can infer that this also applies now. It doesn't say that this only applies in a certain time. And that's why we find in the commentaries of the Rambam a great discussion back and forth how the Rambam himself was allowed to live in Mitzrayim. And in general, there were many Jewish communities in Egypt. So the Rebbe leaves this this is in a square brackets. But the Rebbe says that the fact that it also applies now, that's why many of the later commentaries discuss back and forth how the Rambam could have lived in Egypt. The Rebbe quotes here, the commentaries that discuss, he quotes various commentaries, but in this particular Sicha, the Rebbe doesn't answer the Rambam. This is going to deal with another nuance of this topic. So we have to understand, when we talk about getting married, the Torah says a person is not allowed to get married, a Jew is not allowed to get married to an Egyptian till the third generation. We're talking, in other words, once, obviously, a Jew is not allowed to get married to a non-Jew. But even if a non-Jewish Egyptian became converted to Judaism, became a halachic Jew, that person is not allowed to marry within the Jewish community till three generations, till there's already a grandchild after the conversion, and that becomes eligible to marry within the Jewish community. So they're full Jews if they converted, but they can't get married within the Jewish community. So the Rambam says that this doesn't apply anymore. Why? Because when Sanherib, the king of Assyria, came and he had a world conquest, he mixed up all the nations. This was his policy. He mixed the nations so they shouldn't create a rebellion against him. He mixed them all with each other, and he exiled them from their particular locales. We're talking about all the nations of that region. And the Egyptians, therefore, that are now in Egypt, they're not the same people that were there when the Torah was talking about not marrying an Egyptian till the third generation. And says the Rambam, since they were already mixed up, they're not the same Egyptians, they have other nations mixed into them. So now, anyone that comes from that mix-up, from that which is mixed with other people, is permissible right away. If they're Jewish, if they're converted, they're permissible to marry within the community. Why? And here's the key statement we have to pay attention to, which the Rambam says, Shekol ha-peiresh mehem, anybody who separates from that people that currently lives in Egypt, lehisgayer, anybody who separates themselves from that community, the Egyptian community, to convert, cheskosai, we assume, shepirish min arev, that they are they have separated from the majority that's to be found there, and the majority that are to be found there are not Egyptians, are not original Egyptians. So since in our times in Egypt, this is a mix, it's a country of other people that don't trace their lineage directly to the original Egyptians. So therefore, marriage to a convert from Egypt is permissible. Don't have to wait three generations. Eifa Soku asked the Rebbe, why can't you go back to Egypt now? It's not the same Egypt. So on the one hand, the Rambam says you can get married to somebody who converts from the Egyptian people, because it's not the same Egyptians. On the other hand, it says, you know, you still can't go live there. Base. We would, l'cha'era, it would seem that we'd be able to answer, as some commentaries indeed do say, that the prohibition to live in Egypt has got nothing to do with the people of Egypt. It's got to do with the land itself. The land in Egypt, even just the land, creates a prohibition. That's what the Torah prohibits. And this seems to be the point from the Pasuk, the Rambam. The way he says the halacha is, it would appear to me, that if a Jewish king conquered the land of Egypt, according to the Sanhedrin, according to the court of law, which is permissible, and then it would be permissible to live in Egypt. The Torah said that individual Jews should not go and live there, while it still is in the hands of the non-Jews. Why? Because the deeds that take place in Egypt are worse than all the other countries. What does this seem to say? That the prohibition is because of the deeds of the land of Mitzrayim. And it's not the deeds of the actual non-Jews living in Egypt. It's the land somehow that influences the deeds of those that live there. We have this before. When the Jewish people were asked to send Meraglim, and Moshe Rabbeinu gave a checklist of what to look for. Is that where, I'm not sure if that's where it is. Sorry, I'm not sure where this Chazal is. Anyway, there's a saying in Chazal that there are various springs, in other words, countries that have springs of water that develop certain kinds of people. In other words, people that grow up in a land are a product of the actual land. There are some lands, continue our sages, let it say, that raises people that are engrossed and steeped in immorality. In other words, there's some kind of an energy to the land which creates a certain feeling or a certain behavior pattern amongst the people living there. That's why the Rambam says like this: if the Jewish people conquered Egypt, so then they changed the whole reality. But if it's still a land that's in the hand of non-Jews, even if they're not Egyptians, but that land, without an overt presence of holiness overcoming it, that land is not a place for the Jews can go. It's a place that creates negative deeds. And you're not allowed to live there. That's what it seems to be. So if that's the case, and that's why if a Jewish king, if a Beis Din says to go and conquer, so then what happens is that the borders of Israel then broaden and they incorporate whatever was conquered. And that becomes like Israel for everything. In other words, the conquering would actually create a change in the essence of the land and therefore wouldn't be prohibited to live there anymore. So, however, it's not so clear. And that would answer for us why you're not allowed to live in Egypt. Even though the Egyptians aren't the same Egyptians, but Egypt is still the same land. It hasn't been Egypt has not been conquered, hasn't been transformed to a Jewish place. So that would, remember, we're trying to reconcile why, on the one hand, Rambam says you're allowed to marry an Egyptian who converted because they're no longer the original Egyptians. Even if they were the original Egyptians, you would have to wait three generations. On the other hand, Rambam says you're not allowed to live in Egypt. Well, if they're not originally Egyptians, why not? So we're trying to say here that maybe it's got to do with the land. However, it's not so simple to say. And if it's got to do with the land, then it could be other people, not the same Egyptians. But so long as you don't have a transformative Jewish conquering of Egypt, any non-Jews who live in Egypt, Egypt will still be a prevalent force of negativity and create negative deeds. So Jews shouldn't live there. even if it's not the original Egyptians. However, that's not so clear to make this distinction, because the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs, in the Book of Mitzvahs, he writes that the reason for the prohibition of going to Egypt is we shouldn't learn from their deeds. In other words, it's not got to do with learning from the people of Egypt. So, one second, Doseist, which means to say, the prohibition is not to learn from the people of Egypt, their deeds. So we would still need to understand why, if it's not Egyptians, why are we so worried? We're not learning from the original Egyptians. And also, even if you want to say it's the country that produces such people, so what about when Egypt is desolate? It says that the halacha is, it says even when Egypt is desolate, if it applies, even when Egypt is desolate, for example, if it's got to do with the country, with the land, then it would apply even if nobody's living there. So then it should be even at the time where nobody's there. And and it appears that it appears that the Navi is saying, once I'm not sure, but it appears that once there's no people there, once it's desolate, it appears that there's no prohibition. But if it's got to do with the actual country that produces negativity, then why would that change if there was no people there? I'm not clear on this last paragraph. Gimel, about the prohibition to come and marry within the community for an Egyptian. Ruth the Torah says you have to wait 3 generations. So the Levush writes the following words. He says, when did this prohibition apply? That was in the earlier generations when they were original Egyptians. However, today, after Sancheirev came and he mixed up the people, he put other people in their place. So then it doesn't apply. Even though, says the Levush, that definitely a minority of the original Egyptians did stay in their place. Not everybody was uprooted. There is a minority. So here we employ the teaching. The Gemara derives this, but this is the rule that comes out of the Gemara. That when something is kavua, when something is in its original place, and there's a doubt, it's like half-half. I'll soon explain this concept. Let me explain it right now. The classic case is if there are 9 stores selling kosher meat and 1 selling non-kosher meat, and I see, so now that's a reality we know, there's 9 kosher, 1 non-kosher, and I see somebody going to a store buying meat, I don't know which store he went into. Can I say, well, the majority is, it's 90% kosher, it's probably kosher? No, because it's there, because there's a reality there, it's called kavua, there's something fixed, and we know that fixed scenario has a 10% chance of being non-kosher, because there's a non-kosher shop there, the whole thing becomes like half-half. And if it's half-half, what do you have to do when there's a doubt, a half-half doubt? You got to go and be machmi. You have to go to the stringent. With non-kosher, you can't say, oh, maybe it's kosher. No. If maybe it's not kosher, it's not kosher. What happens if now, by the way, don't make your own halachas based on this. I'm just giving you the Gemara concept. When you have a shaila, you go to a lav. Now what happens if I find a piece of meat, I didn't see somebody go buy it. A dog is carrying a package of meat in its mouth. It's packaged, it looks good, seal is still intact, but it doesn't say from which store it came. So now I don't know. There's 9 kosher stores, there's 1 non-kosher store. This is already separated. It's now it's no longer within that reality of the 9 and 9 out of 10 stores. It's called Parish. It's separated. Once it's separated, I look back and say, one second. This, I now follow the majority. There's 9 kosher, 1 non-kosher. I'm going to look at this piece of meat that's already no longer. It didn't come from one of those in front of my eyes. It's already been separated from its origin. Now I go after the majority. To give you the terminology of the Gemara, Kol kavua, anything that's fixed is kemechtzal mechtzal, it's like half-half. It's, you know, and therefore we have to be machmer, right? Kol de parish, once it's separated from that original suffix, then we say meruba parish, it's separated from the majority. Okay, so now the Lavush is applying this logic here to the people that are living in Egypt. There's definitely a minority that stayed in their place. However, somebody that's converting, he's obviously removed himself from that, right? From that scenario. Now we see him. Oh, you're a converted person. Where did you come from? From the majority, right? We'll elaborate a little bit more. This is a key concept. The Rebbe will take this and develop this and elaborate more. According to this, minorities still stayed in place, even after the people were mixed up. So now we understand why you're not allowed to live in Egypt, because they're still original Egyptians. And they don't become bottled. They don't become absorbed by the majority of non-Egyptians. Because, remember, there's a rule. If you go to the actual place, they're not removed from that reality where we say follow the majority. They're in their fixed place. So fixed place, it's half-half. And if they're still considered half-half, we got to go with the stringency that, yeah, there's also half Egyptians, we can't live there. Once they come to get married, they've moved, now we can follow the majority. Majority are not the original Egyptians. However, we have to understand, why does the Rambam say, and also the Shulchan Aruch says, that a ger, an Egyptian convert, is immediately permissible to get married to a Jewish girl? Why? Because he comes from the majority. The majority is not the original Egyptians. What about the fact that a minority are in their places? Shouldn't, therefore, we have said, depends, if you go to Egypt to get married, oh, wow, then you can't get married. Because even though there's no majority, when you go to the fixed reality, there are some Egyptians there, you got to treat it like a half-half. If you are ever, it's a convert that's left Egypt, okay, she's left. Now we look at it not in its fixed place, now we say it came from the majority, right? And there's a parallel here in parentheses that brings as a parallel in the Gemara in Ksubas. I did not look it up, so I'm not going to endeavor to explain it. My apologies. So we could say that when a person converts, so there had to be a separation from their house. Like the Levush emphasizes, the person that converts separates from the community of the Egyptians. However, that doesn't seem to be enough, because in our case, it would seem that you have to actually separate yourself from the entire Egypt. And the Rebbe builds his case of this question as follows. In Dalet, the Gemara says in Masechta Yevamos that a non-Jew that gave a Jewish woman, again, don't paskan halachas from this, this is the Gemara, a non-Jew that gave a woman a kiddushin, in other words, he betrothed her, we have to be worried. Maybe there is some reality to this which would require a divorce. Why? Because maybe this non-Jew is from the 10 lost tribes. They want to ask, but 1 second, don't we have the rule that once something is separated, they are separated from the majority? The majority of the world population is not 10 lost tribes. So why do I have to think about the minority that is 10 lost tribes and still Jewish? The Gemara says, no. It depends. In the place, we're talking about if a non-Jew gave a Jewish woman kiddushin, betrothed her in a place where the we know the 10 tribes were exiled to. For example, it says, the Gemara says that it says in the pasuk, "Vayinochem that Hashem vayanchem Hashem led them to a place called Chalach and Chavor, etc." Those places. So then, as Rashi explains it, those are places where we know that they're at least a minority of Aseres Hashvatim. They're a kavua. We know that they're fixed there, so to speak. They have a permanence there. And if somebody does a kiddushin there and he goes to that place of permanence, that's like half-half. We have to be stringent and say maybe it is for one of the Jewish tribes. And therefore, this woman would need a divorce in order to get married again. Tosfos says, however, that he doesn't say that there's a minority in the place that they were exiled. And therefore, whenever there's a minority, but if you go to their fixed place, right? We said you have to treat it like half-half. Tosfos says no. In their place, somebody, a non-Jew, gives kiddushin in their place. In their place, they're the majority. Majority there in those places they were exiled to is from the 10 tribes. Not like Rashi says Tosfos, that we say that they're in their fixed place. It's like half-half. Because if he has gone to her, right? So then we would say that he came from the majority. In other words, he's now In other words, he left his house and is now gone and initiated a relationship with a Jewish woman. He's left his house. Now he's left. He's not in his place. It's not his place, so now we can say he left his majority. The Rashi doesn't say like that. And the Rebbe says we understand why Rashi doesn't say like that. Because even though Rashi, in that Gemara and Ksubis I didn't go into, Rashi says there that when a person leaves his house, it's also considered a leaving his place of permanence, and therefore we could talk about him coming from the majority, but that doesn't fit with the language of the Gemara. The language of the Gemara says, when do we say that a non-Jewish man who gave a Jewish woman kiddushin? We have to be worried, says the Gemara, in a place where they are fixed, where they are permanent. In other words, the place where Hashem sent the exile 10 tribes to. According to Tosfos, it should have said in a place where they are a majority. It's got nothing to do with them being fixed in that place. But the fact that the Gemara says the fact that they are fixed in that place, so we understand that this concept is based on the fact that this is their place, and therefore we need to worry about the Kiddushin, because it could be there from, we have to treat it, mechza mechza, half is half. What does it mean that they are kavua in their place? The Pasuk says that Hashem took them to this place. Once Hashem took them to this place, and the Hashem doesn't mention individual houses, he mentions the locale. That entire locale becomes, not just their homes, that entire locale becomes their place. So anywhere in that region where they were mentioned in the Navi, in the Prophet, where they're going to be exiled to, Hashem took them there. It doesn't matter if they left their homes. It's going to be considered like that's their place of permanence. And that's why Rashi brings the whole Pasuk, even though the Gemara already brought the Pasuk. Rashi's emphasizing that because the Torah says, because the Prophet said, that Hashem said, I'm going to take him to these lands, anyone in that whole land, even if they left their house, I mean, especially people, when they get married, they leave their houses. But it doesn't matter. Anyone in that region, because that's where the 10 tribes are, is going to be considered permanent there. If they're considered permanent, even though we know they're a minority, still we have to treat it like half-half. If it's half-half, it could be a Jewish man. Could be from the 10 tribes. We can't just let this woman be non-married and say, no, it was a non-Jew, and the marriage doesn't count. Maybe it was from the 10 tribes. So according to this, in our case, let's bring it back. And if the prohibition is the fact that we're talking about an Egyptian, and the Egyptian name goes in the entire land of Egypt, so it would seem that even if he left his house, it doesn't matter, if he hasn't left Egypt, it should have a law of being treated as a place of permanence. The whole Egypt is the place of Egyptians. So even if now there's only a minority of original Egyptians, but when a place of permanence, we treat it like half-half. And this would be, even according to Tosfos, should be the case, because when Tosfos said that when somebody leaves their home to get married, now we have to treat them like they're coming from the majority, it only has to do with this particular case of the 10 tribes. And because the fact that they're there has nothing to do, there's no prohibition about the Kiddushin, there's no relation between the place and the Kiddushin. Here, what's the whole prohibition of an Egyptian marrying before three generations, even if they're converted? Because they're an Egyptian in Egypt. So there, even Tosfos would say, it's not allowed to leave your house. If you're in Egypt, then you're in your fixed place. If you're in your fixed place, then there should be a prohibition. So then we have a question. If there are still a minority of Egyptians in Egypt, right? But we say, why are they allowed to marry after conversion? Why are they allowed to marry the community? Because they've separated from the community and we follow the majority. So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch should have said that this applies outside Egypt. But if there's somebody converted to Judaism in Egypt, they have to wait three generations. Right? So the Rebbe says, hey, we'll understand all this by understanding a greater question. As the Aruch HaShulchan asks, the Gemara says in the Pesach of Nazir that a woman is considered somebody who's permanent. She's not considered somebody who's mobile. Why? Because the status quo, quoting the verse of Shlomo HaMelech, the honor and respect of the daughter of a king is to be discreet and indoors, not to be out there in the public. That for a regal daughter of a king, discreetness is a virtue. And the way that applies to what we consider Jewish women, Bas Melech, daughter of a king, she's her natural place is in the home. She's not considered mobile. She's considered, so to speak, home-oriented. And that's why, with regards to a woman, the halacha is she's like in her fixed place. I asked the Gemara, but what happens if the woman was actually going, doing, let's say, shopping in the marketplace, and there somebody did a kiddush, and there somebody betrothed her. So maybe then she becomes like she's mobile. So we say, no, even if she's out there doing shopping, since her place, and she's going back home, she's considered to be kavua, she's considered to be in her fixed place at home. If so, if somebody's going back to where they belong, even when they leave for a short time, they're still considered being fixed in their place. So even if an Egyptian left Egypt to get married, but still you'd have a question. When they go back, if they're planning on going back, if they have a two-way ticket planning on going back, so how can we consider that they've separated really, and we can say that they're coming from the majority so they can get married without waiting three generations? But if they're going back, aren't they just like in a fixed place? Vav. So the explanation for this is, says the Rebbe, you have to look at the language of the Rambam. The Rambam says anybody who separates themselves from the community to convert, underlined, we say, we assume that they've separated from the majority. What does the Rambam say, anybody that separates from the community to convert? What is that insert of that word? I mean, wouldn't the same halacha be if they separated even not to convert? Once you separate it, right? We said something is separated from its original place. We look at it as coming from the majority. Now, but the Rambam is adding the Wordley's guide to tell us that what does it mean to separate? Here, separation is not a literal separation, a physical separation. It doesn't mean they left Egypt or left their home. Here, we're talking that conversion means a separation. Conversion, by definition, is a change. The concept of changing can be in two ways. You can separate by separating your physical location, going from one place and coming to the next one, and not planning to go back to your original place. Well, that would be a move, a permanent move. Then there can be a permanent move in your state of being. In the reality, in the place, in terms of halachic and Torah status. Status, according to Torah, is now totally changed and removed from one status to another status. Like in our case, that beforehand, this person was a non-Jew, an Egyptian, and now through the conversion, they become totally converted, completely changed and transferred to a new reality. And therefore, this is, we said before, what happens if a woman goes out into the market? No, we said she's going back, so she's considered still like she's home. Here, there's no going back. Somebody converts, there's no going back. There's one way. Nobody can ever convert away from Judaism back to their initial reality. It's a change, it's a permanent change. And that's why the Rambam says, listen to this, that now the Rambam should say clearly that in our days, a non-Jewish Egyptian that converts is allowed to immediately get married to a Jewish woman. Even if he finds himself in Egypt, it doesn't make a difference. Even if he's in the same home he grew up in, because he's no longer considered kavua, he's no longer considered fixed in Egypt. Now we consider him porush. He got married, he separated and changed his reality. However, what about the other Egyptians, non-Jews? They're still in Egypt. We say they're a minority. That doesn't matter. When you go to Egypt, they're in their fixed place. In a fixed place, even if there's a minority, we treat it as a half-half. If it's half-half, oh, you can't go and live in Egypt. The original Egyptians are considered at least half, and therefore we can't go to their place of being and live in Egypt anymore, even if though there's only a minority of original Egyptians. Now that Abby goes and gives in square brackets some of the nuance in the laws of Bittul. You know, we know the law of things being absorbed and losing their identity to a majority. That minority loses its identity to the majority. So Rebbe says especially that this is a reality that it could be, we can't even talk about the minority being Bittul, losing its identity into the majority. both in terms of the minority not losing its identity, and both in terms of the majority that doesn't have the power to cancel out this minority. Why? It goes like this. One, when we say that there are a minority of Egyptians, that's only quantitatively. There's less numbers of Egyptians than other peoples that were mixed in by Sancheriv. But here we're talking about a qualitative prohibition. We're talking about the bad deeds that Hashem says, don't learn from their bad deeds. So there, the quality and the intensity of their bad deeds could be so intense that it's like something that doesn't become bottle. There's a law in the laws of Bittul that something that's a choshev, dover choshev, something that's prominence, doesn't lose its identity even in a greater majority, because it's always there. So if the negativity of Egypt is so intense, it wouldn't become bottle, even in minority. Number two, what are we using to cancel out this minority? Other nations. Other nations who may not actually be in opposition to the negativity of Egypt. Usually when we talk about Bittul, something canceling out a minority, it's something that's fighting that minority. In other words, you have, let's say, black and white mixing. You have 20% white, 80% black, so the black's going to overtake the white, right? Or let's see, you do it the other way. You have 80% white and 20% black, the white will take over the black, right? What happens if that 80% is not really white? It's a color that blends into black as well. So it's not going to cancel out the black. It will cancel out the black, but it will still remain blackish. It's not going to cancel out the black, right? So if what's left there are other nations who maybe are not as negative as Egypt, but still their behavior is still not the behavior that's appropriate. It's still behavior that's inappropriate. So a Jew can't go there, because even though there's still only a minority of Egyptians, but that majority has not canceled out that minority. Zayin. According to all this that the Rebbe has said, now I just want to give you the context. The Rebbe said this sicha in right after the Six-Day War. And the Six-Day War that we had, the Jewish people had miracles when Israel was in a lightning victory, overcame the entire air force of Egypt and so on. So the Rebbe says now like this. The Rebbe was saying the sicha back then, in 67. According to all this, that even in Egypt now there's a minority of Egyptians. It's still original Egyptians. So now through this we have a special inspiration during these days. And to preface, says the Rebbe, even though everything in Torah is always eternal, it goes for all times, for all places, however, there are some things that remain conceptual. In other words, their eternity is in the spirituality. You can't fulfill them. They're not happening right now. And there are some things that are actually still relevant and applicable and able to be fulfilled in physical. Which shows that the eternity is even so strong that it even is in the same reality of the world happening here today in our world, in full view. So the Rebbe says, this is in our times now like this. It stays in the Pasuk that the Bnei Yisrael, we're told, you saw everything I did to Egypt, and therefore now listen to my voice and keep my covenant, and you will be to me a special nation from all the nations, a nation of Kohanim, of priests, and a holy nation. For this is understood, the context, the follow through there is, you saw what I did to Egypt, now keep my mitzvahs and be a special nation to me. So what's the it's a flow that the seeing what the miracles Hashem did to Egypt is a prelude and a preparation to what it says afterwards. The psukim that it says afterwards, we quoted some of them, and then it says, and I brought you to me. Look what I did to Egypt, and I brought you to me. I rejected the Egyptians and I fought them, and I brought you, my Jewish people, to me. Now if you listen to me, keep my covenant, you'll be a special people to me. In other words, it seems to be what the Torah is indicating is when the Jews see physically how Hashem makes miracles for them by punishing the nations, which pain and cause anguish to the Jews. So this arouses the Jewish people that they should strengthen their covenant with Hashem by listening to what Hashem asks from us. So this we can understand that now in our times, that I've been talking right after the Six-Day War, when we see that Hashem is bringing retribution on Egypt, and we know, as we've just spoken at length, that there's at least a minority, but there are some of the same Egyptians there, and as we said at length, if they're in their place, it's considered like half-half, still considered like the original Egyptians. So now we see again physically how this verse is being fulfilled. You have seen what Hashem says, what I did in Egypt. It's no longer talking about 3,300 years ago. Now we saw it again. So that should therefore arouse within us and elicit the continuation by the Jews, the continuation of the Pasuk. You saw what I did to Egypt. Now you should have a heightened inspiration to listen to my voice, to do fulfill my covenant. That Yidden should strengthen themselves in filling Torah mitzvahs and becoming a special nation by being a mamleches kerim, a nation of priests, and a holy nation. And this becomes the preparation for listening to the voice. And we know that if we listen to the voice, it says, Hayoim, when is Mashiach coming? Today, if you listen to his voice. So if we listen to his voice by all the inspiration we see around us, starting from the Six-Day War, where Hashem did to the Egyptians in front of our eyes and saved us. So this listening to Hashem's voice is a preparation for the coming of Mashiach, as Mashiach himself promised when he was asked, when are you going to come? He said, today, if you listen to my voice. It should be in a Karev Mamish, immediate reality.